All right, so we'll start then. So welcome everybody to the late afternoon session on IFRS for SMEs. Main objective of the session this afternoon is to talk about the review process that we're busy with the SME standard. What I would suggest, we are a small enough group, so we will have Slido and stuff like that, but if you've got questions as we go along, rather ask the questions immediately. It's much easier to deal with it when the slide's still up and we can discuss it directly. My name is Daryl Scott. I'm an ISB board member. I'm directly involved in the SME project as the chairman of the SMIG. And the other speaker today is Yusuf Hunsi, who's an ISB technical staff member, and he's directly involved as one of the staff members on the project. For those of you who've followed the webcast, you will have heard his voice quite a lot over the last couple of months. And with that, I'm going to hand straight over to Yusuf, who's going to do the first part of the presentation.
Thank you, Daryl. So the purpose of this session is to actually look at what are the proposals on which the board is seeking views in the request for information, the RFI. But before we dive into the RFI, we're going to have a couple of slides that kind of give background to the IFRS for SME standard. So the IFRS for SME standard was issued in July 2009, and the board issued the standard in response to international demand for a global set of accounting standard for small and medium-sized entities, SMEs. Soon after the SME standard was issued in 2009, the board set up the SME implementation group, the SMIC. So what is the SMIC? The SMIC is an international advisory group to the board, consisting of those who have experience preparing, using, or advising on SMEs' financial statements. The aim of the SMIC is to support international adoption of the IFRS standard, monitor development, and advise the board on any amendments to the IFRS for SME standards. When the board issued the IFRS for SME standard, it stated that it planned to undertake an initial comprehensive review of the IFRS for SME standard after the standard has been used for 2 years, which means that the first review was due in 2012. So the support of this MIG, and based on the view that sufficient jurisdictions have adopted the standard by 2010, so it provides kind of insight into the implementation experience. So the board commenced the first comprehensive review in 2012, and in 2015, the board issued amendments to the IFRS for SME standard effective 1st January 2017. So what is the IFRS for SME standard? In a nutshell, IFRS for SME standard is good financial reporting made simple. So in terms of length, it's 250 pages, including accompanying guidance in non-mandatory appendices. So it's approximately 10% of full IFRS standards. So how is IFRS for SME standard was developed? The starting point was full IFRS, and then the full IFRS was simplified. So it was simplified based on user needs, because the user needs of SMEs is different from full IFRS. User needs for SMEs are mostly based on short-term cash flows, liquidity, and solvency, and cost-benefit considerations. The standard is a standalone standard, so it doesn't require an SME to refer to full IFRS. It's a standalone omnibus standard. And the IFRS for SME is intended for small and medium-sized entities. Small and medium-sized entities is defined in the standard, and the standard defines SMEs as those that do not have public accountability and publish general purpose financial statements. In terms of where we are in adoption of IFRS for SME standard, in the 166 jurisdictions for which profile is posted on the Foundation's website, 86 jurisdictions require or permit use of the IFRS for SME standard. So there's one question here for you to kind of give a bit of background about people in the room. So the first question is, does your jurisdiction require or permit the use of the IFRS for SME standard? The option is A, yes, B, required or permitted to use the standard based on the SME, so it's a modified version of the SME standard, or no. Okay, so 67% of the room. they require or permit the use of the IFRS for SME standard. So we're going to now jump in into the 29 comprehensive review. So the board decided that it will be a three-phase approach to the review. So the first stage of the review is a request for information. Now the objective of the request for information is to seek views on whether and how to align the IFRS for SME standard with full IFRS standards. In stage two, the board will decide if it should develop an exposure draft of amendments to the IFRS for SME standard, and stage three would involve analysis of the feedback received from the exposure draft and issuing amendments to the IFRS for SME standard. The phase for the 29 comprehensive review is consistent with the phase for the 2012 review. With that, I'm going to hand over to Daryl, who will take you through the phases and then mostly focusing on the scope of the IFRS for SME standard.
So to talk a little bit about the timeline, we started the process in 2018 of looking at phase one. Specifically, what we were doing there was just touching base with a couple of our constituent advisory bodies like the Emerging Economies Group and getting views on the direction that we should take. 2019 has largely to date been consumed with actually working through what we think should go into the request for information. And that's been a discussion process where we've gone into the individual aspects that we think are important for us to be consulting on to get board views, call them board tentative decisions, on the direction that we might take once we get to the later stages of the project. Now, just as proof that what happens at the ISB in board meetings is not always predictable, this slide was prepared a couple of weeks ago and presumed that we would have finished our consultation process by the end of the third quarter, by the end of this month. But in fact, the ISB has asked the staff to bring back further information for us at the next meeting, which we'll discuss a little bit, which we'll discuss and touch on a little bit later in this afternoon's discussion. We expect to issue a RFI, to issue the document, a request for information, either at the end of this year in December or perhaps in the early days of 2020. The topics that we expect to include in the 2019 review are set out on the slide. I'm not going to go into them in any great detail at this point because what Yusuf and I will do after this is actually dive into the specifics. But perhaps just to highlight the particular ordering of the topics, and I think the first two topics on this are what I would call strategic in nature. So the first one, the scope of IFRS for SMEs, who gets to actually apply the standard. From the perspective of the board, we would think that starts to drive how we think about what should be in the standard. So it's critical for us to know what type of entities are using it in order to understand what the standard should in fact itself say. The second topic, which talks a little bit about the alignment of IFRS for SMEs, is how and to what extent IFRS for SMEs should be aligned with full IFRS. And again, that's a good strategic thing for us to think about. It helps the board in thinking about the framework as it goes into the discussions about individual topics, as it goes into the specifics of the individual subjects that we need to consider. The next three topics are then specific. So the third one on the slide deals with the specific individual standards, interpretations, and other things that we think should be brought into IFRS for SMEs. And as I say, at this stage, when we discuss this a little bit later, we were talking about individual standards that have been issued since the previous review was done, and whether or not those should be aligned with IFRS. And then the second last topic is kind of, for lack of a better term, I guess a little bit like it shows that topics never quite die. So these are topics that we've dealt with in the past, where the board made a very specific decision in the past not to align IFRS and IFRS for SMEs. In the 2015 review, these topics were raised where some constituents would have preferred us to align and asked us to consider alignment. We decided not to do it at that stage, and now they've come back again during the process of this review as a topic to be considered. The last one's really important, and again, as I say, we'll get to all of these topics later, but the last one's really important because that deals with the IFRS for SME specific topics. Subjects that have been raised because they are not covered in full IFRS, but constituents who apply the SME standard believe they are relevant to them. And therefore, we need to consider them, even though in doing that, in considering these particular topics, we may in fact create areas where there is not alignment between the SME standard and the full IFRS standard. So the first of the strategic topics, in talking to that previous slide, was the scope of the IFRS for SME standard. And what I'm going to start with here is a little bit of a recap, a little bit of a reminder of what the existing scope right now is for IFRS for SMEs. So the scope has got two elements. The first element, the most important one, is that you can only apply the IFRS for SMEs standard if you are an entity that does not have public accountability. And we define public accountability specifically by saying that if you have listed shares, if you have listed debt, if you intend listing your debt, or if you intend listing your equity, then you do have public accountability and you can't apply IFRS for SMEs. So that's the first test. The second one is if you are an entity that holds assets in a fiduciary capacity. So you hold assets on behalf of a broad group of outsiders as one of your primary businesses, you're doing that in a fiduciary capacity. In that circumstance, IFRS for SMEs says that you have public accountability, and this standard is not the standard that you are allowed to use. I think this is important because it sets the tone for the way the ISB thinks about writing the standard. And we'll talk a little bit later about some of the ways that we've explored whether we can expand the scope and why we've got to the place we've got to. But this is a really important starting point for the standard. There's also a second criteria, the one closest to me in the dark orange box. And it's up on the slide because people very often forget it. And when I frequently hear people who are concerned about IFRS for SMEs being onerous as a standard, it often relates to this second orange box. So the way IFRS for SMEs, the board's consideration in writing IFRS for SMEs is, as I mentioned, you shouldn't be a publicly accountable entity, but also you should be an entity that is required to prepare or to publish general purpose financial statements. What are general purpose financial statements? They are financial statements that you hand out to your bank, you hand out to your staff, you hand out to your creditors. In other words, you're using that set of financial statement for multiple purposes. Now, frequently I speak to people and they say, but why do I have to do all of this stuff? I prepare the set of financial statements and then I pack it in my bottom drawer and I never look at it again. And a year later, I do the same thing. Well, arguably, you should not be preparing financial statements under IFRS for SMEs because you don't have to publish general purpose financial statements. You have chosen, or your regulator has chosen for you, that you have to do it, but it's not what we would have considered within the scope of the standard. All right, so during the 2015 process, the last review of the IFRS for SMEs that we did, the board concluded at the end of that process that we're not going to change that scope. And so the scope I've just referred to was the original scope and it stayed the same during the whole process. But we heard back from respondents who were very keen that we would consider making changes. And those respondents made a number of suggestions. They suggested that we should increase the scope to include some publicly accountable entities. They felt there were certain circumstances in which we could allow publicly accountable entities to use the standard. Some of them suggested that we should simply remove the restriction entirely from the standard and leave it to individual regulators and individual jurisdictions to make the decision. So make it a free choice of regulators within individual jurisdictions. And then there were some requests to clarify what was meant by fiduciary capacity, to spend a little bit more time to help people understand how to apply that particular element of the standard. Now, as I said, the board, in thinking about this in that round, decided not to do anything about this. And it was specifically because the board had a concern at that stage that if we start to change the scope of the standard, we would have to, on the other side, think about the requirements of the standard. So if we were thinking that we had perhaps a listed company, even if it was a small listed company, we would have to think about what the needs would be of those shareholders in a listed company. We'd have to change the standard itself. But as part of the preparation for the 2019 review, the staff did some research very specifically on how we could change the scope, what the options were for us to do to change the scope. And this slide and the next one list a couple of examples of that. So in the space of listed, we could think about circumstances where the shares are traded on an alternative market, not on the main stock exchange, but on some alternative over-the-counter market. We considered circumstances in which the shares were closely held. So even though it was a traded company, even though it was a listed company, all the shares were held by a very close-knit group of people. Or the shares were not regularly traded, so trading might make a difference. Finally, we considered the last one on here is quite an interesting one because it's a discussion that's going on under business combinations, under common control as well. Should we consider allowing the use of IFRS for SMEs if all of the shareholders unanimously agreed to that? So those were some of the research considerations on holdings of equity. On the holding assets in a fiduciary capacity, we considered whether or not we could consider providing relief in circumstances in which the membership of the company was strictly constrained, a very clearly defined, very obvious group. And in the previous discussion, it was that one of the participants mentioned a situation where teachers in her jurisdiction run a particular fund or have a particular fund run on their behalf and said, well, that fund is now a fiduciary capacity, is holding assets in a fiduciary capacity, but clearly it's a very constrained, very small group of defined people. So could that be exempt from the process? We also considered whether we could set a number. So if you've got less than 100 members, do you qualify? Can we provide that qualification? Can we provide an exception? Or again, if the members, the people putting money into the entity, are comfortable to unanimously agree that the entity doesn't have to apply IFRS, is that an acceptable outcome or an acceptable exception to the requirements in the standard? And what we did was we took this research and we went around to a number of different groups that we normally correspond with, the IFRS Advisory Council, Emerging Economies Group, IFAS, SMIG, and discussed with all of these groups what we thought what they thought of those particular proposals. And I think it's probably fair to say that there was certainly not an overwhelming outpouring of support. In fact, generally speaking, people didn't like the proposals that we were making. And I think their concerns were a couple of fold. They felt that it would lead to an increase in the complexity within the standard itself. So this issue that I raised earlier about us feeling that we needed more disclosures if we had a different type of user base. They were worried about reduced comparability, that you were going to find companies operating very much in the same space with very much the same shareholder base and the like, potentially doing things in a different way. They were really concerned about how hard it would be to draft these exceptions. It is worth saying, though, that they still supported, or there was still some support, for the very bottom one on the page, which was support for allowing jurisdictions to specifically decide themselves whether or not entities should be included. Now, again, that removes us from the ability as the standards board. When we think about it, if we don't know how the standard is going to be used, I think we sort of circle back to the first issue, the potential complexity. So we felt like that wasn't necessarily providing us with a solution. So I think at the end of that, the board has arrived at a situation where, and in fact, let me go to the next slide, because the next slide tells you what the staff recommended to the ISB at our September meeting. And the recommendation to the board at the meeting was that we, as a board, tentatively decide not to make a change to the scope. And we ask the question from our constituents what they believe. So this is exactly what I'm doing. I'm telling you that the board has decided not to make a change, and then I'm asking you in A, whether you agree to keep the scope the same, or whether you think the scope should be changed. Are we working, or should we just do it by hand? Okay, who thinks we should keep it the same? Okay, so I've got three wanting to keep it, four. Who thinks we should broaden the scope? That's actually a bit of a mixed response from yesterday, so that's interesting. So I'd say probably about half-half in terms of the group. So where the board has got to is to decide that we want to keep it the same, and at the board meeting that we had last week, we decided that this would not be an explicit question in the RFI. So we felt that we would stay silent on it, we would describe the circumstances, describe the board's thinking, but not ask the question. Clearly, that doesn't stop you from responding to us, those who would like to see the scope changed. But what I would suggest is, to the extent that you are going to make that response, to the extent that you're likely to come back to us and say, we would like you to broaden the scope, I think it'd be useful to understand the parameters, what you think we should expand the scope to, and for you to give us a little bit of feedback on how you think we should go about doing it. And with that, I'm going to hand back to Yusuf, who's going to talk about the next big topic, which is the alignment of the standard.
Okay, so in this part, what we're going to do is we're going to have a look at the proposals in the request for information, so those things that we are seeking views on. But before that, let's have a look at the alignment principles. So as I mentioned earlier, the IFRS for SME was developed based on full IFRS with modifications to reflect the needs of those users and cost-benefit consideration. So before embarking on the 2019 review, the board discussed the approach to follow, and two alternatives were identified as possible approaches. Approach one is simplified IFRS standard. So under this approach, the IFRS for SME would be aligned with full IFRS standard using three alignment principles: relevance, simplicity, and faithful representation. Approach two is to have a completely independent set of accounting standards, and under approach two independent standards, the IFRS for SMEs would only be updated for those issues that have been brought to the attention of the board by stakeholders. The board tentatively decided to seek views on aligning the IFRS for SMEs with full IFRS, applying the following alignment principles. So let's dig a little bit deeper into these three alignment principles. The three alignment principle is very important because it gave the board a bit of structuring in its discussion when aligning the IFRS for SMEs with full IFRS. So first is relevance. Under relevance, the board evaluated whether the problem that IFRS standard was addressing, whether this problem is relevant to SMEs. So this principle assesses whether aligning with a new or revised IFRS standards would make a difference in the decision of users of financial statements. If it passed relevance, then the next principle applied is simplicity. So where a standard is assessed as being relevant, then the board assess whether the recognition, measurement, disclosure requirements of IFRS standard could be simplified to meet the needs and preparers of users of SME financial statements. Then the last principle is faithful representation. So what it does under faithful representation is, after the proposed simplification has been applied, if applicable, the financial statement is still faithfully represent the substance of the economic phenomena they purport to represent. That is, those financial statements still provide information that is useful for decision making to a broad range of users. These are the three alignment principles the board has applied to each standard it was looking on. There's a question here. So the question here is whether you agree with the board framework when considering whether to align the IFRS for SMEs with full IFRS. So do you agree with the principle, disagree, or you don't care providing the standard provides useful information? Okay, so the interesting thing is nobody disagree with the principle. Okay, so I think broadly most people agree with the principle, which is consistent with what we heard in the earlier session. Now let's now move on to look at those IFRS standards which we are considering in this 2019 review. So you have the conceptual framework, and then you have what we can call the big three, IFRS 9, 15, 16, and you also have those standards that were considered in the 2012 review, but we are reconsidering these standards. That's because in the 2012 review, the board decided that stable platform was a priority. So that's the reason we are reconsidering IFRS 3, 10, and 13, and also applying the alignment principles. So let's start with the conceptual framework. So when the board developed the IFRS for SME, the board stated that the fundamental concepts from the conceptual framework provide the foundation for both the IFRS for SMEs and full IFRS. Section 2 currently is based on the old conceptual framework, the 1989 framework. Now, if we agree that the IFRS for SME should continue to be aligned with full IFRS, then it makes sense that Section 2 should be aligned with the 2018 conceptual framework. That's a tentative view of the board on which we request for views in the RFI. Now, aligning Section 2 with the 2018 conceptual framework will require consequential amendments to other sections of the IFRS for SMEs. For example, Section 17, Property, Plant and Equipment, uses the definition of an asset from Section 2. So aligning Section 2 with the 2018 conceptual framework will require consequential amendments to other sections. Now, the other thing is, in the IFRS for SME, we have the concept of undue cost or effort exemption, which is available to SME under specified circumstances. This is an additional relief in certain circumstances where the cost of providing the information outweigh the benefits that users will derive from having that information. And the difference here is there is no such concept in the 2018 conceptual framework, but it's only in the IFRS for SME. And the board preliminary decision is to retain the undue cost and effort exemption in the IFRS for SME because it's a relief, it's a measurement relief, so therefore useful for SMEs. Now on IFRS 10, so first of all, before looking at the changes we are proposing, the alignment, the thing is when we look at IFRS 9, we acknowledge that IFRS 9 is a big standard. So what we did first thing is we looked at IFRS 9 in separate parts because the project on IFRS 9 was done in phases, phase one, financial assets, phase two, impairment and hedging. So we look at it in a similar way, and we apply these alignment principles to each part of IFRS 9 to come to a conclusion of whether it's relevant for SMEs. So having applied the alignment principles to IFRS 9, we come to the conclusion that there will be like three main changes if we align the IFRS for SMEs with IFRS 9. First change is on classification and measurement of financial assets. So the proposal in the request for information is to retain the examples in Section 11, but then supplement these examples with a principles based on the SPPI, solely payment of principal and interest. And if we align for classification of financial assets, there will be two main simplifications. The first simplification is we will remove the requirement to determine how financial assets should be classified and measured on the basis of an entity's business model for managing the financial asset. The other simplification we would introduce in the IFRS for SME is there will be no fair value options for equity instrument. The reason being is in the existing IFRS for SME, there is no such option because all equity instruments are at fair value for profit or loss, and we think that it's better not to introduce the fair value for OCI category for equity instrument into the IFRS for SMEs. The second change, if we align, will be replacing the incurred loss model in Section 11 with the expected credit loss model. But the expected credit loss model will be the simplified approach in IFRS 9 without any modifications. So when we looked at impairment, of course, we apply the relevance criteria. We do acknowledge that if you look at the scope of the IFRS for SMEs. And if you look at the purpose of the general approach of the expected credit loss, we conclude that it's not relevant for SMEs. But on the other hand, we acknowledge that the expected credit loss model is an improvement in financial reporting. It provides more useful information, and therefore we came to the conclusion that we should align by introducing the simplified approach into the IFRS for SMEs. Then the third thing the RFI will consult on is on the fallback. As you may be aware, under the IFRS for SMEs, you have the option to use Section 11 and 12, or you could use IAS 39, but the disclosure requirement of Section 11 and 12, the fallback. First thing we're going to consult in the RFI is whether there's a need for the fallback. That is, get some input in terms of whether it's commonly used in practice. Then the second proposal in the request for information will be if there is a need for the fallback, whether people support changing the fallback to IAS 39 to fallback to IFRS 9. So these are the big changes under the IFRS for SME if we align with IFRS 9. Then moving on to IFRS 15, revenue. So the board tentatively decided to seek views in the RFI on three approaches of aligning Section 23 with IFRS 15. Alternative one would be to modify Section 23 to remove the clear differences in outcome from applying Section 23 and IFRS 15 without a wholesale reworking of Section 23. Alternative two would be to fully rewrite Section 23 to reflect the principles and language used in IFRS 15. And alternative three will be to defer alignment until the next review. Now, the RFI will identify alternative one as the board's preferred approach. And the RFI will also consult on whether we should provide transition relief. That is, if the board proceeds to an exposure draft with either alternative one or alternative two, whether it should permit an entity to continue to use its current revenue accounting treatment for any contract already in progress at the transition date or scheduled to be completed within a set time after the transition date. So when we look at the relevance criteria when looking at IFRS 15, we come to the conclusion that the principles in IFRS 15, it give rise to information that is more relevant than that obtained with the current wording in Section 23. Now the proposal on IFRS 16. IFRS 16 is an interesting one. So the board tentatively recommend aligning Section 20 with IFRS 16. We come to the conclusion because alignment would result in greater transparency about entities' financial leverage and capital employed. It will more faithfully represent an entity's assets and liabilities, and it will provide more useful information and relevant information to users. So what alignment would mean? Alignment would mean that you will have a single lease accounting model to be applied to all leases. Now, when it comes to 16, there will be two kinds of simplification. One kind of simplification are simplification that already exist in IFRS 16, which will brought in into the IFRS for SMEs. So you have the recognition exemption for leases of 12 months or less, the short-term leases, and leases of low-value assets. Now, in addition to this existing simplification, or you can call them practical expedients in IFRS 16, there will be additional simplifications to Section 20. First of all, there will be additional relief on discount rate, determining and reassessing the lease term and other areas as outlined on the slide. To dig in a bit of more detail, let's have a look at first discount rates. So the requirement under 16 is you have to use a rate implicit in the lease, if that is readily determined. If not, the lessee use an incremental borrowing rate. Here we recognize there's a challenge. The challenge is to determine the interest rate implicit in the lease for many leases, particularly those for which the underlying asset has a significant residual value at the end of the lease, for example, property leases. Acknowledging this challenge, we propose a simplification. So the simplification under the IFRS for SMEs will be you would start first with the incremental borrowing rate, and if not, then the first the interest rate implicit in the lease, then the incremental borrowing rate. But if both of them cannot be determined, then an entity use a discount rate by reference to market yields at the end of the reporting period on high-quality corporate bonds. We think that such rate reflect the time value of money and include a risk allowance for the risk associated with the liability, and hence such a discount rate is appropriate. Now the lease term. IFRS 16 defined the lease term as the non-cancellable period of a lease plus periods covered by an option to extend the lease if it's reasonably certain to exercise that option, plus periods covered by an option to terminate the lease if it's reasonably certain not to exercise that option. Now, if you compare it with the IFRS for SMEs, there's no definition of lease term in the IFRS for SMEs. So there are two options here. First option would be to retain the current approach, which means do not define lease term in the IFRS for SMEs. Or the second approach would be to simplify IFRS 16 definition of lease term. We don't think that not defining lease term is a good idea. That's because if we align with IFRS 16, that will result in an increase in lease assets and financial liabilities. It will therefore help preparers if there is a definition of lease term in the IFRS for SME. So the preliminary view is to change the definition to non-cancellable period for which an entity is required to comply with the lease. Any subsequent extension to the lease term shall be accounted for as a new lease. This simplification will make it simple and easy for SMEs to determine the lease term. Then subsequent remeasurement of lease liability. What IFRS 16 requires here, it requires a lessee to remeasure the lease liability if there is a change in the lease term using a revised discount rate, assessment of a purchase option using a revised discount rate, amount expected to be payable under residual value guarantee, and future lease payment resulting from a change in an index or rate used to determine. The simplification here is we will require remeasurement in the event of a substantive change in the expected term of a contract and other change, the effect of which will be reflected in the income statement in the period in which it is recognized. So we will simplify the requirements for subsequent reassessment of lease liability. And the other simplification will be on disclosure. So the proposal is to retain the current disclosure requirement in Section 20. So the number of additional simplification that will be proposed for IFRS 16. Now IFRS 3. IFRS 3 was considered in the last review. We reconsidered IFRS 3 applying the alignment principles. And when applying the alignment principles, we came to the conclusion that there will be three areas where we would recommend alignment. First area is to introduce requirement for step acquisition. That's because we think it will provide comparable and better quality information to users. Second alignment will be acquisition-related cost is expense at the time of acquisition. That's because it do not represent an asset of the acquirer. And the third change will be for contingent consideration, which will be measured at fair value without regard to probability, and subsequently accounted for as a financial instrument instead of an adjustment to the cost of business combination, with changes in fair value recognized in profit or loss. Now for contingent consideration, there will be a measurement relief. So for contingent consideration, there will be the undue cost or effort exemption. Now when looking at IFRS 3, we came to the conclusion that we would not recommend alignment for measurement of non-controlling interest at fair value. That's because we think that will introduce complexity into the SME standard. And we will not also be recommending alignment for change to the recognition criteria for recognizing an intangible asset acquired in a business combination and other areas. That's IFRS 3. So there are three main areas where we are recommending alignment: acquisition costs, step acquisition, and contingent consideration. IFRS 10. The existing IFRS for SME, the definition of control is based on the superseded IAS 27, which means that in the IFRS for SME, you have two models of control, one for subsidiaries, one for SPVs. Whereas in IFRS 10, you have one single consolidation model. Under the proposal, the definition of control in the IFRS for SME will be aligned with IFRS 10. So to recap, what the requirement will be is the requirement will be to an investor control an investee if and only if the investor has three, have all of the following. So there are three elements to the definition of control. First is power, power over the investee. Second is exposure or rights to variable return from its involvement with the investee returns. And the third is a link between power and return. And the simplification here will be to retain the in paragraph 9.5 of the IFRS for SME, and the simplification is when an entity concludes it has power over an investee directly or solely from voting rights, which allow it to control the relevant activities of the entity, it should be permitted to consolidate the investee without having regard to assess the remaining elements of the definition, that is the link between power and returns. The other thing is the board do not recommend alignment for investment entities. Therefore, we do not recommend introducing the consolidation exemption for investment entities into the IFRS for SMEs. Now, IFRS 13. For IFRS 13, the first recommendation for alignment will be to recommend aligning the definition of fair value in the IFRS for SMEs with IFRS 13. That's because we think that it doesn't make sense to have two definitions of fair value in the two standards. The second is to align for the fair value hierarchy in the IFRS for SME so that it incorporates the principle of the IFRS 13 fair value hierarchy and also include examples that illustrate application of that hierarchy. The other thing where we are recommending alignment is on positioning of the fair value guidance. So the IFRS for SME standard include disclosure requirement in each section that require the use of fair value or directs an entity to the disclosure requirement in section 11, more specifically 11.43 and 11.44. What the board has recommended here is to move the general disclosure requirements to a single location, alongside guidance for fair value measurement and the guidance relating to amortized cost. In the board's view, this will increase consistency of disclosure and therefore providing clearer information to users of financial statements applying the IFRS for SME standard. In addition to that, the board also tentatively recommend moving the guidance on fair value measurement to Section 2. That's because Section 2 already identifies fair value as one of the two common measurement bases and includes a definition of fair value. Therefore, if we move the fair value guidance to this section, that will put emphasis on fair value measurement alongside pervasive principles. The two standards for which we are not recommending alignment, yes.
The slide 26, IFRS 10, there's a recommendation not to introduce consolidation exemption for investment entities. Yes. Any specific reason why it's not to be introduced?
So one of the main reasons is when we look at the relevance criteria, we came to the conclusion that we think that very few investment entities would be applying the IFRS for SME standards. Therefore, this exemption would not be applicable to that population of entities that apply the IFRS for SME standard.
Main standard has that exemption.
Full IFRS.
Yeah, so the small one doesn't have that exemption.
Yes.
I'm getting it right. Okay.
Currently, they don't have the exemption in the IFRS for SME. We're not proposing for alignment because of this specific reason. We think that it's not relevant for entities applying the IFRS for SME standards because very few, you need to be an investment entity to obtain that exemption, and we think that investment entities would normally not apply IFRS
for SMEs. But there is no harm in retaining it because some jurisdictions could have that. So
I think this would be. I think the important point here would be that's why we're consulting. So I think the document that we prepare, the RFI that we'll prepare, will explain that when the board evaluated the requirements for an entity to qualify as an investment entity, we concluded that that would typically be a company applying IFRS, meeting all of those requirements, not a company meeting IFRS for SMEs, publicly accountable issue. And it comes down to that sort of holding in a fiduciary capacity type of thing. But I think what would be really interesting is if you have examples where you believe this is applicable for SMEs, it would be good to hear about those examples.
Yeah.
What's my view?
Yes, which is why in the request for information it's a tentative view. Then we will seek feedback on whether people agree with the board view or disagree. Then on the basis, yeah. So the two standards for which the board is not recommending alignment is first you have IFRS 11, but IFRS 11 is a tentative decision, so the board has asked staff to bring back this issue to the next board meeting, so and then the board will make a decision about whether or not to recommend alignment. And so IFRS 11 is an interesting one. So when we look at IFRS 11, we look at IFRS 10 and IFRS 11 separately. But then we came to the conclusion that there's a link between the definition of control and joint control. So we get back to the board with more analysis to come to a conclusion. Then the next one is IFRS 14. For IFRS 14, the main reason for which the board is not recommending for alignment is because the board has an ongoing existing project on rate-regulated activities, so it's therefore better to wait until this project is finished before considering for alignment. So it's and the other thing is IFRS 14 is an interim standard. With that, we have a question here to see whether you support the board tentative decision to consult on aligning the IFRS for SMEs with IFRS 9, 15, 16, 3, 10, and 13. So 100% so far, so that's a good sign. Okay, I think it's quite pleased to see that most people actually support the alignment of these standards, which basically means that we don't need the next question. So I'm going to skip the next question and then move on to the question on whether you support the board tentative decision not to align the IFRS for SMEs on IFRS 11 and IFRS 14. I would like to clarify on this question so that the request for information will set out that the board do not recommend alignment and then will seek views. That's what the question is intended for. Okay, yeah, so maybe it's a small room, so we could hear if anyone wants to explain why they do not support the view of not aligning with either 11 or 14. I'm guessing, I'm making a guess that it would be 11 that you do not agree. And if someone wants to give a reason or their view on 11. Yes.
Well, I guess in terms of the thinking, it's really a question of, I can see, if you go back to the scope, the rationale, for example, in the situation we've just discussed, but on joint ventures, I'm not sure that I sort of, joint arrangements, I'm not sure I, you know, I'd want more information, to be honest, to know whether I've supported that or not. I think 14, undoubtedly, mm-hmm. entirely see that. It's 11, as you say.
Yeah. For IFRS 11, we were only proposing alignment for the definition, only for the definition to align the full IFRS with the IFRS for SMEs. So your view is you think we should align, or you...
I just can't see it. Okay. I mean, you know, I'd want to think about it more, I think.
Okay. Okay, so with that, I'm going to hand back to Daryl, who will cover the IFRS interpretations and amendments to IFRS standards.
So what Yusuf has talked about up till now is the broad headline issues, the big ones we all know about, the 15s, 16s, and et cetera, that which are the changes in the standards we know about. But clearly, we can't just think about the big stuff. If we're looking to align IFRS for SMEs with IFRS, if we think alignment is a key part of the process, then we have to look beyond the big ones and also look at the smaller issues. And the starting point for that is the interpretations. So IFRIC issues interpretations. Those are interpretations of current wording in IFRS standards. In the context of full IFRS, these interpretations are binding. Once they're issued, they become part of the mandatory requirements of the standard. But they also have persuasive influence in the SME space, because very often the interpretation that is issued, an IFRIC 21, for example, is issued over words that are very similar in IFRS for SMEs. And so what you have is you have two sources, if you like, of information when you're looking at the SME standard. You've got the SME standard, and then kind of hanging in the background like a mother-in-law, if you like, looking over your shoulder, is this little bit of extra thing that you've got to think about, that you've got to worry about. And so from the perspective of us preparing the IFRS for SME standards, we think it's important that to the extent that an interpretation has valid context, is valid for the consideration of the SME standard, we would like to pull it into the standard. And there's a rationale for that. IFRS for SMEs is written in such a way, and is we try very hard to emphasize that when you apply the SME standard, that means you don't have to look beyond the SME standard. You don't have to look beyond what's in this guidance. And so if we can incorporate anything out there that might be seen to be persuasive, it helps us keep the information in one space. So what the board did is it looked and considered the three different interpretations that had been issued since the last review that we did. The levies, IFRIC 21, foreign currency transactions 22, and uncertain tax treatments 23. And we felt in each circumstance, the wording in IFRS for SMEs was sufficiently similar to the context of full IFRS that that interpretation had persuasive views. And so we felt it was important that we bring that clarification into the SME standard. Now, I mentioned earlier, this doesn't mean that we're going to try and publish the whole of IFRIC 21 in the SME standard. Instead, what it means is we're going to try and just make the words in the standard clear enough so people understand that in the context of applying the SME standard, they will get the same outcome as they would have got applying full IFRS read with IFRIC 21. And I think that's perhaps a broader question. It didn't come up in this session, but it came up a little bit in the previous session. When we think about applying those alignment principles, it doesn't mean that we're going to drag IFRS 15 down and put the whole of IFRS 15 to the SME standard. It means our objective is to try and get the same outcomes as you would have got applying IFRS, full IFRS. You get the same outcomes now applying IFRS for SMEs, but in a simplified, easier way to apply, easier way to think about. So the board has concluded that all three of these interpretations should be captured in the terminology that's in IFRS for SMEs. We also talked about a number of the amendments that have occurred to full IFRS in the period since the last review. Now, I'm not going to go through each of these. There's a list of them over this and the next slide. But I'm going to pull out a few that I think are really important and just give you a little bit of a flavor of why the board felt that it was important. And the first one is materiality. And the board spent a lot of time at the full IFRS level considering how materiality impacted on the way people read our standards, the way they interpreted our standards, and the way, as a consequence, they prepared their financial statements. And that meant that in some circumstances, financial statements were too long because there was too much stuff going in, because people weren't thinking properly about materiality. But it also meant in other circumstances there was stuff getting left out, stuff that was material, that was relevant, that just wasn't getting into the financial statements. And so we've published some really good guidance. What's in the standards, the IFRS standards itself, along with what is in the practice note around applying materiality. And in thinking about this, the board felt that having a consistent definition of materiality that could be thought about the same at the IFRS level and at the IFRS for SMEs level would actually simplify the application of the IFRS for SMEs. It would make it easier to understand, easier to apply, easier to get to a sensible outcome. We talked a little bit about the disclosure initiative, specifically the fact that under IFRS for SMEs, the feedback that we've had from users of SME financials is that liquidity and cash flow information is particularly important for them in understanding the results of an entity. And so given some of the changes that we'd introduced into IAS 7, specifically address solvency and liquidity, we felt that those would provide useful information at the SME level as well, and was worth us considering, was worth us bringing in. The depreciation, amortization, what's acceptable, specifically the discussion about whether or not revenue-based depreciation was acceptable, was a very useful clarification of how you think about depreciation and amortization, and we felt reflected an issue that could also arise with SMEs applying the standard. And so it was useful to bring that into the application of the SMEs. The other one that we talked about and that the other one that I wanted to highlight a little bit is agriculture and specifically the accounting for bearer plants. Full IFRS, the agriculture standard specifically required that you account for all agricultural produce at fair value. That was subsequently amended to say that you should account for bearer plants at cost. IFRS for SMEs required the full accounting at fair value. And so it made sense to consider whether or not that change in full IFRS should be applied to IFRS for SMEs as well. And it's maybe worth making a point here, just in terms of, we talked earlier about the general principles that we thought about as a board. One of the principles that we were thinking about when we were applying specifically these amendments was that if something in full IFRS made a particular paragraph, a particular section easier to understand, then there was a strong logic to carry that change over to the SME standard, because making the SME standard easier to understand is part of what we're trying to achieve. If some change to full IFRS made a section or a requirement easier to apply, it made sense to carry that down to IFRS for SMEs, because that is the objective, is to keep IFRS for SMEs easier to apply. And certainly the anomaly that we didn't want to have existing is that IFRS for SMEs would actually be harder to understand or harder to apply than full IFRS. So that's sort of in a nutshell the big changes that we considered in aligning IFRS for SMEs with full IFRS. The next section I wanted to talk about just a little bit was the existing differences between IFRS for SMEs and full IFRS, and the biggest one of these existing differences at the moment is borrowing costs. And essentially what happens is under full IFRS, you capitalize borrowing costs under certain circumstances. So for example, during the construction period of a fixed asset, you capitalize the borrowing costs and you accumulate them into the value of the asset. Under IFRS for SMEs, you don't. You expense them immediately. During the 2012 review, we had mixed feedback on this one. Some people liked the idea of it just being simple. You simply expense it, end of story, done and dusted, no more worrying about that number, no more worrying about whether or not it created an impairment, etc. Other people prefer to see IFRS for SMEs aligned with full IFRS. The board at the last, and some people obviously wanted an option. They wanted to be able to choose between the two. The board during the 2012 review decided it didn't make sense to introduce a new option. Part of the simplification of the standard was not having options. And we felt that introducing a new change here would create complexity for the applicants of the standard. This particular topic, though, hasn't gone away, and the staff brought it back for us to discuss at the last meeting. And in that discussion, they were recommending that we consider either including expenses, so capitalizing, or introducing a policy option, or doing nothing, maintaining the current requirements. And the board concluded that it was appropriate to maintain the current requirements. We believe that we've been through this debate, and we were not hearing new information that would lead us to a different conclusion. The last of the matters that we're looking to discuss, the last of the topics that we believe are important to bring out in the RFI, and this comes back a little bit to that slide that Yusuf showed, where he showed the continuum. We said on one side, our objective is alignment with full IFRS. On the other side, it's an independent standard. As Yusuf mentioned, we decided alignment with IFRS, but not necessarily as an absolute that had to happen. And so one of the things we said we need to consider is if there are circumstances that only impact on SMEs or that impact on SMEs in a different way. Now, the topic of cryptocurrencies has been one that the board has discussed at length, as has the IFRS Interpretations Committee. The board did a little bit of research on this, and the board concluded that the cryptocurrencies were not something that appeared on a lot of big company balance sheets, and even when they did appear, they were not particularly material. They tended to be small amounts. This is not really an activity that big companies engage in. The Interpretations Committee, so the board decided not to do standard setting and handed this project back to the Interpretations Committee. The Interpretations Committee looked at this and concluded that the existing requirements of IFRS provide a sufficiently valid framework for companies to use in looking at crypto type assets, and in fact at any asset that is held for the purposes of wealth accumulation. Essentially what they said there is that it can either be an IS2 type inventory asset, so a commodity type asset if you like, or alternatively an intangible asset under IS38. And the advantage of both of those standards is they provided the preparer with the opportunity, the ability to carry those assets at fair value on their balance sheet, which many people feel is the appropriate accounting for this type of asset. So when we came to talk about this at the IFRS for SMEs level, the staff were thinking that there are probably a couple of different drivers that might lead us to a different conclusion in the SME standard to what we had in full IFRS. The first driver is we just don't know about the prevalence of these assets on SME balance sheets. We have publicly available information for listed companies. We have publicly available information for a lot of entities that apply full IFRS, but very limited information for SME entities. And so the first thing we needed is we needed more information. We needed to understand, firstly, are these things appearing on the balance sheets of small companies? And secondly, if they are appearing on the balance sheets of smaller companies, are they material in those balance sheets? So we needed to do, if you like, something of a data gathering exercise. And then knowing that we were now going to do a data gathering exercise, the second question was, well, if these are prevalent, do we want to do something about them? And the staff was recommending to us three different options. We could do nothing. There's always an option. It's always something we can think about. Or we can specifically, and sorry, I should have mentioned, IFRS for SMEs does not have a revaluation option for intangible assets. So not only did we not know about prevalence, but secondly, the solution that we had for full IFRS doesn't work for IFRS for SMEs. So the staff's view was, firstly, let's do a data gathering exercise. Secondly, assuming that the data gathering exercise tells us this is prevalent, we've got three options we can consider. Either do nothing, or introduce a revaluation option that allows you to revalue all of your intangible assets. So it brings IFRS for SMEs in line with full IFRS in the context of revaluation, or create a bespoke accounting, for SME transactions, for SME cryptocurrency transactions. The board discussed this last week. We felt it was really important to get this information. We felt it was important to have the information so we could have a basis to get or to make a decision. But we also felt that we did not want to go ahead and do anything. And I think the question you've got up here, let's ask the first question. Okay, so do you know whether or not entities in your jurisdiction hold cryptocurrencies on their balance sheet? Or do small entities keep cryptocurrencies? Okay, so I was about to say 100% no. Right, I'm not going to leave up there too long. I'm going to assume that four people know what the balance sheets look like and the rest don't know what their balance... Oh, there's another one. I think this is probably roughly consistent with what we heard from the earlier group, that very few standard setters are aware that jurisdictions, that entities within their jurisdictions have these assets on their balance sheet. But for what it's worth, 33% is probably a higher outcome. In fact, it's a considerably higher outcome than what we determined when we looked at full IFRS. So it does suggest that this is a valid area for us to think about from the board perspective. There may well be a difference between SMEs and full IFRS. Shall we move on to the second question? Okay, so if we were to do something, which alternative do you support? The first alternative there is we do nothing, which is very similar to what's happened in full IFRS. The second alternative, this jumps around, which is quite confusing. Okay, so the second alternative is to have a revaluation model for all intangible assets, not just cryptocurrencies, but anything. And the third option is a bespoke section for cryptocurrencies. All right, so the interesting thing about this is we're probably getting an outcome here which I would describe as being different to what the board's decision was at the meeting last week. Now, I'm not sure that we have enough information to say that we would go out at this point and change where we are with the RFI, because this is clearly, this is just a consultation document. But what it does suggest, and I'd make the point to everybody in the room, to the 80% in the room who felt we should do something, that I think it is important that you provide us with that feedback in the RFI, because I think we need that message from you. Based on the information we've gathered, we weren't necessarily getting that from elsewhere, but clearly that's a view that we heard both from the previous group and from this group. All right, so I'm going to stop there for a moment before I talk about our other activities and just see if anybody's got any specific questions about where we are on the comprehensive review, specifically about the process going forward and where we are with the process at the moment. Yes, sir. So I'm probably going to answer both of your questions in one go. So to give you, by way of example, Yusuf spent a little bit of time talking about IFRS 16 and leases specifically and bringing in the leases standard into the... One of the documents that the ISB had the opportunity to see as a appendix at a point in time during the process of discussing was how IFRS 16 would be captured in the IFRS for SMEs. And it would have, in fact, resulted in a shortening of the section on leases. So I think it's probably a valid question to ask. If I were to start out and say, what is my objective as a board member? My objective as a board member would be that the changes we've talked about here should not make the standard longer. It should keep us within that 250 page. And I might give, it's actually a pity that Michelle's just left the room a second ago, but I might challenge the team who are in the room to see. I think that should be our objective. We've said that it should be simple, we've said that it should be short, and I think that means that we should try to set ourselves that requirement. It means that what we're doing is we're taking a standard like IFRS 9, which in and of itself is 250 pages long, and we're going to try to condense that standard in such a way that we can explain it in a simple way to get across the message we want to without increasing the page count. It sounds a bit silly. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like we are completely and utterly within this framework of number of pages. But one of the key advantages of IFRS for SMEs is we've kept it short. And if we allow ourselves to just roam, I think we lose the benefit of the standard. And so I think we will set ourselves some sort of target like that. And again, if there's anything in there that you think we can cut out, feel free to let us know. That's what the RFI is about. Any other questions? All right, I'm going to spend 5 minutes then quickly, just while I've got SME interested people in the room, to talk about a Q&A that's out at the moment. So again, background, the way that the IFRS for SMEs work, we don't have an interpretations committee. But to the extent that we get questions on anything, we will respond to those questions by putting them through an internal process, by working with our SME implementation group, which is a group that advises us on how to apply the standards. And we will ask them very specific questions about how, or whatever that specific question is. We'll then publish a Q&A. A Q&A, like anything else we do, goes through two stages. We first publish a draft. We get feedback on the draft. We consider that feedback and perhaps amend the draft, and then we publish the final Q&A, which is like an interpretation, but it is not mandatory. It is simply there as educational guidance. This is quite an important Q&A because it deals with a couple of different moving parts in IFRS for SMEs. If you are applying, if you have an investment property under IFRS for SMEs, you are required under the standard to account for that property at its fair value. But you get what's called an undue cost and effort exemption. Undue cost and effort says that if the effort required to produce that fair value exceeds the benefit that your users will get from having that information, then you do not have to do it. Now, just as a highlight here, we had quite a long discussion about undue cost and effort in the earlier session. If the information is available in the newspaper, it's not going to ever be undue cost to get the information. So what you're looking for is what is the actual cost of going out and finding the information and then applying that information in your standard. So this Q&A brings in undue cost and effort, it brings in investment property, but it brings them in a very specific context. The context is that of a company that is applying IFRS for SMEs for the first time. When you apply the standard for the first time, you are required to go back to the beginning of your comparative period and apply it on that date and then roll forward for your comparative year plus for the current year. So if I'm thinking about an investment property now, I've got to think about what the fair value was at the beginning of the comparative year. IFRS for SMEs says I have, when I'm thinking about investment property, I can apply undue cost and effort. So the first thing that we discussed as a SMIG was whether or not we needed any guidance on that, and we concluded no. Clearly, if the standard allows you to use undue cost and effort, you're allowed to use undue cost and effort. So then we got into the second question, which is when do you think about undue cost and effort? Now, typically, these companies that are applying IFRS for SMEs for the first time will only start thinking about this at 30 December 2019. So they'll be thinking about it today for the set of financials that they are finishing and the previous set of financial statements. So the question now is, when do you consider the costs, or what do you consider in determining that cost? Because there are two elements to the costs now. There is, how hard is it to find the information if I had been doing it on the 1st of January 2018? And then there's a second question, how hard is it because I've waited 2 years to do it? Okay, so the question now becomes, can I sort of retrospectively say, well, okay, because I didn't do it for 2 years, it's now become too hard to do? And the recommendation, the draft Q&A, is saying no. You have to think about how hard it would have been if you had done it when you were supposed to do it. Okay, you can't allow the simple passage of time and the fact that it might have got harder because of the passage of time to influence your determination of undue cost and effort. Now, clearly, this is a Q&A that is very specific to a very specific fact set, but it's one that you need to think about because a lot of times SMEs are preparing their financial statements late. They only get around to doing it a year after the time or a year and a half after the time. And that has an effect on thinking about that you may only be getting around to doing this calculation late. You have got to put yourself in the mindset you would have been on 1 January 2018. So, say this is a Q&A. It's out for comment. The idea is that you should now use the opportunity, if this is something that interests you, if you have a look at the specific repercussions of this one, we'd look forward to getting comments from you on the particular topic. And with that, I'm not going to ask this question. I think we probably leave that to hear what we get back. So I'm going to go straight to remind everybody that there is a lot of material available on the IFRS for SMEs website. We would encourage people to use it, in particular IFRS for SMEs. If you are a practitioner, if you are working with people in this space, we have gone further than we have on full IFRS to provide educational guidance, educational support. And all of that information is available on the website. And we encourage you to use it. We encourage you to pass it around. We encourage you to encourage other people to use it. And with that, I'm going to say thank you very much. Thank you, Yusuf. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Any last questions anybody wants to ask? Cool. We can also ask, feel free to ask any questions over drinks in a few minutes. Thank you very much.